Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and this week we have an interview with Sorel Toll, Vice President EMEA of Rapid, a global payment service. Please hit subscribe to keep up with this and the latest in FinTech news. All right, we have a great episode, an interesting interview with Sorel Toll of Rapid, and with me is my co-host Steve.
Hey, John. Good to be here virtually on Zoom.
And our guest, Sorel Toll. Welcome to the podcast.
Pleasure being here with both of you these days.
First of all, tell us what is Rapid and what does it do?
Well, Rapid is what we call a fintech as a service platform. And I think it helps to kind of introduce Rapid based on the Rapid story, which also fits in, the later parts of, I think, this podcast and the scalability of startups. Rapid started out almost four and a half years ago as a consumer-facing multi-currency digital wallet, trying to solve the problem of people that are traveling around the world, either business travelers or tourists, and they need access to the local currency in a very cost-effective way. Obviously, exchanging currencies is a very expensive experience. It doesn't matter if you do it on your credit card or when you actually make a payment, go through a high street exchange bureau or exchange at a bank. This is a very expensive process.
It's very expensive when you do it at the airport.
Yeah, and this is where most of us end up doing it because we're late to the flight, we're running, we're busy, we end up exchanging at the airport, but actually exchanging, dynamically with a dynamic currency exchange on the credit card is probably even more expensive. They opt in and ask you to, do you want to pay with your local currency? You think, hey, this is a great deal, and it ends up that you're paying maybe one and a half or almost twice as more using this services, having your home card issuer exchange your currency. But this is a different story, and this is what Rapid initially wanted to solve. We built a wallet, e-wallet system. We got a license in the UK. We're planning to launch in the UK, so we got a license. We set up a company, integrated into multiple solutions that will enable people to access cash on the street, either mom and pop shops, 7-Eleven networks, but the pay zones of the world, as it's called here in London, and also the ATM network. And that service started to catch up quickly. And on one hand, people or businesses started to access us and say, hey, we've seen you've built this great network. We want to access this cash network that you are now actually enabling the digitalization of cash in the UK. So this is one thing we ran into. And the other thing, we said, okay, let's now start expanding globally. And we ran into the issue of, hey, you want to move into another country, you almost start from scratch. The technology stack is almost there, but you still have to integrate into local payment methods. You need to get or sort out your local licensing issue, get some people on the ground, and it's just not scalable. There's 100 plus countries. It's going to take us another 6 or 9 months to open another country. That's 50 plus years. That's, not something for a startup to do.
Regulatory issues as well?
Yeah, there's regulatory issues. You need to sort out, the regulatory requirements and coverage. And it's not only getting the license, but it's also meeting the different regulatory requirements. How do you KYC the customer, meet the requirements of the local bank? So it's completely unscalable, especially for a company that, its business is somewhere else, and this is just a supporting service to your business. We looked around and said, there must be a solution for companies that want to scale globally and can connect into something. And, we could not find anything. We were already at that time using Amazon Web Services for IT services. And we said, any IT services we need, we just connect, use the same API, the same agreement we have with Amazon. A click of a button here or there, a checkbox there, and we get another service. And we said, there must be an Amazon AWS for fintech somewhere. And, guess what? We did not find any. And we said, then maybe this is what we need to do with our technology stack. And this is what Rapid is. Rapid is the AWS of fintech. We enable merchants, global merchants, or merchants that want to expand globally, to access all of their fintech needs through one API, one agreement, one reconciliation on all of the different fintech services. And fintech services is not only payment collection, and we'll get into that later. It's also payment distribution, and it's not only, you know, collecting payments in through cards. It's also collecting payments through local bank transfers to cash, to all the mobile wallets that are getting to be a big success over the world these days. So we enable our customers, or global merchants, we're a B2B provider. We enable these customers to collect, to disperse funds, to issue cards, to acquire cards. We're a principal member of Visa and MasterCard in both Europe and Asia. So we have global coverage for issuing and acquiring. And this is typically what Rapid is, where all of these capabilities are built primarily around a very flexible e-wallet infrastructure that enables us to connect all of these services into that e-wallet and expose this through one simple API. So basically, if you look at our infrastructure, it's an API-driven platform that underneath connects in an intelligent way into the different fintech services.
That's pretty interesting. Thank you for the overview. So, Sorrel, one of the things that I saw in sort of the collateral is that you guys mentioned that you have over 1.6 million cash collection endpoints across the globe. I'm most interested in how companies are able to scale when they deal with such a very fragmented market. Can you walk me through that journey of getting all those endpoints and all those connections into one single API, to say in one single SDK?
This is a nightmare if you don't plan it right. And luckily, we have managed to get the architecture correct, where we are able to, I would say, encapsulate all of these different payment methods into one API. At the end of the day, you know, if you look at it, there is a very limited set of parameters, or I would say well-defined set of parameters that is needed to, you know, make a cash payment or a bank payment or a card collection. The thing is that in many places they're, you know, called differently, they're structured differently. And we have built this machine that can take this and, you know, all of this random requirement on the endpoints and connect them very efficiently. And we've also built a very process in-house to get all of these different requirements, build them into an internal spec that R&D can then, you know, integrate to. So we have a very, very strict process internally that we collect all this information. We have a group of product managers that can turn this into our uniform language and then get it into production. And we're actually able to release, you know, as many as 8 different such connectors per week these days, which is very fascinating. I will agree.
So another question. So I understand that you oversee the EMEA market, and Rapid has really focused on sort of the emerging market. What kind of unique challenges does that pose in terms of how you deploy technology? Because I know that you're also, you guys are becoming bigger players in Africa and in Southeast Asia and in Latin America as well. How would you describe the challenges of going after those markets now?
I think the first part of your question is, you know, the challenges in EMEA, and then, you know, the second part is probably more into the more emerging markets. I think in EMEA, when you look at it, there's two challenges, and maybe this is also typical to the general challenges that Rapid has. And because when we move into a market, we move in two different spearheads, I would say. One is connecting into the available payment methods in the market, anything from cash, local wallets, local payment methods, direct debit into the banking system, you know, the SEPA Direct or BACS in the UK, things like that. So this is one challenge, and we have a team of business development managers that work in the different territories and cover and identifying and then, you know, signing the agreements and integrating these local payment methods. And the other is identifying the merchants that have needs for the Rapid services, either in the territory itself or outside of the territory. So these are two parallel processes that we're going. Obviously, when you look in Europe, the network development is much different than the network development in the emerging market. The market here is more developed. Cash is very negligible. I would say the banking infrastructure is getting stronger. The PSD2, open banking, things that are starting to kick in Europe are taking a much more central position when it comes to payments, either payment collection or payment distribution. On one hand, it makes it more easy because everything starts to be API driven. On the other hand, it's very competitive and you have to build your own, you know, added value on top of these basic services. So these are kind of the challenges that we're facing in Europe. On the network side, on the business side, we are seeing more European businesses starting to go global. And this is where we can connect them into our services and enable them this one API connectivity into multiple payment methods across the world. One thing to remember is that we're not only B2C in terms of the support or the support of our customer use cases. Many of our customers use this for B2B payments, so paying their downstream supply chain or marketplace sellers, a lot of escrow account management on marketplaces. So it's not only enabling the B2C or the consumer side of the fintech, it's also on the B2B side. So this is when it comes to our challenges in Europe. Going into the emerging markets, then it's more of a play of identifying and connecting into the different local payment methods, like the M-Pesas in Africa, which became a very strong player in the payment infrastructure there, or going into Asia Pacific, where you would see multiple local payment solutions in every country. And the challenge there is to identify the ones that, you know, really turn the needle, rather than, you know, the others, which is, you know, probably just a waste of time integrating too, because they don't drive traffic yet. And obviously this is changing continuously. So you need people on ground in the countries to manage these payment methods and really, you know, identify the time when such a payment method is becoming, you know, a major player in the market.
You've grown so fast. You were saying you guys are less than 5 years old. What allowed you guys to take off so quickly? And were there some especially difficult hurdles along the way or near-death experiences? If you say there weren't any and it's been very smooth, I think you're going to make a lot of people listening jealous.
No, I think we suffer from everything that all of the other, you know, startups that are scaling up suffer from, including, you know, we had to completely turn around the company or pivot the company when we moved from a B2C play to a B2B play and a platform play. So we went through all of these stages. I think that what worked for us well is two things. One, that we got the technology stack right from the start, and we could actually build on the technology stack that we initially built for the B2C play. So this was one thing that worked out well. The other is that we've managed to attract very large global merchants as the first merchants. And there's two advantages to that. One, they drive a lot of volume into the pipes, which is very important for small companies, and that enables us to scale very fast. And also, when you come to a network provider and you say, I have this big customer and this big volume, their, you know, interest in working with you is completely different when you come to them and you say, yes, I want to integrate, and, you know, I don't have a clue what the volume will be. So
they really got the ball rolling for you. How did you get those first big guys then?
A combination of, you know, personal introductions from, you know, team members, and also introductions from our VCs, which is another big benefit. Having the right VCs invest in the company, VCs that are well connected in the specific industry that you set the country, the company in, that helps. If you have your VCs sit in the boards of your potential clients, then obviously that is a very quick shortcut into getting the business done. So that also worked out well. I just want to go back to the big disadvantages with these big players is that you need to play the ball by their rules. So they kind of make you build your network and your technology according to their needs. Because at that point, you know, it's a yes sir game. You know, you do what they tell you to do. And for startups, this could be a very dangerous game if they take you in, you know, the wrong direction or the direction that is only good for them and not good for the whole market. What worked for us well is that the first or the initial customers had very typical needs that fit a very large set of customers in their industry and other industry. We started out in the gig economy business, and some of the generic solutions we've implemented for that market actually work well for many other merchants, large and small.
Great. Yeah, I'd love to hear about a good pivot, you know, being flexible to what the market is telling you.
I think that was the pivot when we moved from the consumer-facing wallet to the, I would say, B2B fintech as a service platform. That was the major pivot that we went through at Rapid.
Interesting. So, Sorrel, you're Prime Minister. You're in London, of course, and Boris Johnson was just released from the hospital recently, so we're in the middle of this global pandemic now. And I'm wondering, have you seen any interesting data about remittances or payments that maybe have shifted or changed as a result of COVID-19?
Obviously, remittances is becoming a bigger business today. We are a player in this field, although it's not, you know, our major focus. But being in the different markets with the different payment options, we see more remittance companies coming to us for our network, and we see that business is growing. We also see a lot of other businesses which were more, I would say, local and maybe regional, starting to move quicker across the globe, and they need to now access local payment methods and so on, things in the online education, video and music streaming, some health and wellness related apps. Gaming obviously is going, you know, going global much faster. Apparently, you know, we're all now stuck at home. The lucky ones still have a job to do. Others are, you know, many are unemployed. So people are spending now more time on the internet, and, you know, they're, if you were used to consuming your online games or your online, you know, streaming or health or whatever, or gaming or other software as a service that you were consuming, you now have more time to investigate, to look for new solutions, new providers, and you're reaching out to providers outside of your region. And this is where a lot of these small players, or some of these small players, are starting to see international traction. And this is where they now need to go through the optimization of their payment structure, adding local currencies, local payment methods, and things like that, which was earlier more of the bigger global retailers kind of business going local. Now we see a lot of smaller businesses going local as well as their international traffic grows.
Who are your major competitors? Are you worried about Ripple or Adyen or some other companies?
You know, on one hand, I want to say, you know, we don't have competitors because we're doing something which is so differentiated and so different from the others, which are more kind of vertically focused on the payment space. You know, if we look at the payment space, you know, the first phase, you know, maybe 10 years, 5 years ago, was card-based. It's all about collection of payments. It was card-based, very limited localization. A business wanted to start accepting payments. They signed up with a local acquirer, and they will use that acquirer to accept all of their international payments. The second phase is people understood that is not efficient. It's very expensive, and the conversion is lower as you go global. So they started moving into local payment methods, and this is where we've seen Adyen go and Stripe and the others adding to their card acquiring, also some local payment methods, a selected number of payment methods. We're now starting to see what we call the third phase of fintech as a service. It's more localized, more integrated solutions. It's no more just payments, because the global operations have broader requirements than just collecting payments. They need to disperse funds. You need to pay out either to your consumers. There's a lot of refunds going through the pipes now. A lot of payments you need to perform to your downstream suppliers on a global basis, your marketplace sellers, marketplace partners. There is card issuing business models associated in the gig economy space. In other areas, there is global treasury management, FX. So global and bigger merchants now require more integrated solutions. And this is where we see the third phase. And obviously, you know, as the world moves into this, we will see Adyen's coming into this space, or Stripe coming into this space. So fast forward a year from now or 2 years from now, we will see these probably Stripe, Adyen, you know, out there together with us in the fintech as a service providing world. What I think originally, you know, kind of indicated the AWS of fintech, or a platform play. So today, I think we're kind of leading this, but obviously, you know, there will be, you know, maybe five global players, and we believe we will be one of them.
So you mentioned Stripe as well, but I know that they're actually one of your investors. Why would a competitor invest in you guys?
No, the easy answer here is you need to ask Stripe for this.
You're just glad to take the money.
Yep. No, I think this is an opportunity for you to have them on a podcast and comment on this.
Yeah. If you can help us set that up, that'd be great.
Yep.
So you're focused a lot on scaling and growth right now, not so much profitability.
That is true. I think this is the right place to be for a company at our size and that raised, you know, significant amount of round B and C to carry us, you know, through this growth phase.
Your last round was $100 million, yeah?
Yep, that was a C round, yeah.
Yeah, hopefully enough capital for growth.
It looks, it will enable us to grow both organically. We're also looking into acquisition opportunities. Obviously, at this time of, you know, the year where, you know, where the market is with the COVID pandemic, there are bound to be some good opportunities for acquisitions. So we're working on a couple. We're keeping our eyes open for additional ones. And we're going to use, you know, some of this money to expand through acquisitions.
So you're based in the UK, yet your mission is to sort of integrate the world. Have you seen any effects of Brexit into either your business model or your strategy going forward?
The only real effect is that we need to set up a new license in Europe to cover the European Union after the Brexit, and we're already well into the process. So by the end of the year, we will have another regulation, potentially even two different regulations in Europe. So that is, I think, the major challenge. Although now with the pandemic, you know, I'm not sure how fast Brexit will continue to move. You know, there will probably be another extension for another year or so. I don't think people will have the time or money to deal with Brexit, you know, come the end of the year.
Oh, interesting. So you maybe see this as maybe not shaping up as planned because of the crisis.
Yep. I think there will be another extension. There was an extension given until the end of 2020, but I think they will need to change this to give organizations and also the governments time to get organized. Everybody is so busy with, you know, this terrible pandemic that we're dealing with, that, you know, they will need some additional time, I believe.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's a big challenge, of course. Are there any other big obstacles you see ahead for either Rapid or in global payments?
Not so much obstacles, but I think we will see a lot of, you know, startups, a lot of, you know, small companies challenging to to go through this, to go through these times in terms of fundraising and getting their business model right and attracting customers. They initially wanted to attract. So we'll see more, you know, rebranding or pivoting of startups in that business. It's not our direct market, but it obviously has effect on all of the markets. And this is something we're already starting to see here in Europe. A lot of startups here are pivoting and getting, you know, their business model adapt to what is going here in the markets. You know, there's a company here in London and Core Music. They're a marketplace for booking musicians for events. So if you had a bar mitzvah or a wedding, you can book somebody to come and play music at the event. But there's no events now. And they actually pivoted to a marketplace for recorded music messages. So you can now get this artist record a music message for you for a certain fee. You know, this way, you know, the musicians can still earn money. They can still earn money. So, you know, this is a small pivot that somebody has done. And we're seeing this, you know, there's the intro. It's a dating app that has moved to what they call ISO dating, that enables people to organize video dates for their users. So there's all kinds of local pivoting, rebranding, changing business models. But this is more for the smaller startups.
That's pretty fascinating. Yeah, we've seen also, we're of course in the Bay Area, and we've seen a lot of companies sort of shift their model to take advantage of, not take advantage of, but rather to deal with the effects of the pandemic. So in terms of restaurants going to take out only, a lot of actually, as you mentioned, ideas about virtual dating as well. So yeah, just all these new sort of quasi mini industries popping up, which I think speaks to how flexible some businesses can be and some cannot. But staying here on sort of the COVID track, I'm wondering, have you guys seen any data that reflects either an increase or a decrease in certain types of payments or maybe merchants? Because I know that here in the US, I just saw a report recently in the Times that highlighted how, as we can expect, right, there was a massive increase in card purchases at things like supermarkets and groceries, but a decrease in at places like gas stations and basically every other category, including travel, of course. But do you have insight into those kind of transaction data across the world?
In some aspects, yes. You know, we do see a surge in digital content, online education, video and music streaming, and obviously online gaming. You know, we do see a surge in the demand and the payment processing by these companies. Obviously, you know, other companies are 1-0. We have companies that is doing, you know, airline bookings and you know, online reservations. This has all gone to zero. There's, you know, practically no business there. So these are companies that went from, you know, hundreds of millions and millions to zero just overnight. You know, everybody's in the online has, you know, seen either less of a drop or even a significant increase in sales if they manage to get their global act to together and adapt and adapt very quickly. We've seen some B2B grocery delivery companies moving into B2C and seeing a big change there. And, you know, companies that have stayed in the B2B space, they were doing groceries to restaurants, you know, they're still at zero. But their competitors that have managed to pivot into making these deliveries to consumers instead of restaurants are seeing a big demand.
Right. It's interesting to see a lot of these shocking changes. I've seen pictures of the pollution levels before and after in cities, and it's cleared up so much. I just saw a map of the flights going on, you know, the world map before and after is just amazing how the skies are pretty much clear of planes now. And I was worried about our connection with you. Even on the phone lines, they're getting tied up so much more than before. And the internet is not always stable. So it just, this whole shift in behavior, I'm just curious, and I guess none of us knows how long that kind of shift. Some things tend to stick around changes in behavior tend to stick around for longer than others.
Well, I think the funny thing is what, you know, everybody now is speaking about, you know, the exit strategy. You know, a couple of months back, this was, you know, a jargon for startups. You know, what's your exit strategy? And now everybody's into the exit strategy. How do we exit from this pandemic conditions and get people back on the street? And it's going to be very interesting to see how this develops. And you know, I guess different countries will adopt different strategies for their exit strategy and starting to drive business back to the streets, because otherwise, you know, this is going to be an economic disaster for everybody. In Israel, for example, unemployment went up from 3% to 33% over, you know, 2 weeks.
Wow.
So even if people, you know, come back to work, you know, this will probably go back down, but it will probably go back to 15, you know, 10, maybe 15%, which is terrible for every economy. And we'll see this in other economies as well. So I think a lot of it will depend on the exit strategy and how long it will take us to what I would call go back to normal. The other thing is how much of these habits that we've acquired will remain with us. You know, how much of this online digital content will continue to use? How much digital learning will continue to use, rather everybody going back to, you know, face-to-face lectures in the university or what have you? How many people will continue to work from home? You know, maybe now we'll say, you know what, I don't have to go to work every day. I can, you know, work from home 2 or 3 days a week because it worked out well. So it really depends how much of these habits will stay with us, and this will have an impact on many industries. You know, how people will continue to order food or groceries from the local supermarket. It turns out it works very well when you order it online and it comes in time and everything is in order.
Yep.
So maybe people will continue to order online instead of running to the supermarket or driving to the supermarket. So we'll definitely see some changes. It's going to be interesting for all.
It will indeed, yeah.
So is there anything that Rapid specifically is doing with their products or service as a response to this?
The only thing that I would mention is that we have put a plan together to support small businesses that are in stress these days, where we have offered them 3 months of free payment processing. So, you know, a company that is in the B2B space wants to go into the B2C space and start accepting payments from consumers. Somebody who has a free online service and wants to start doing a subscription solution, or a wellness site that wants to do Zoom sessions with their customers, or a Pilates studio. We're offering these guys 3 months of free processing. So they connect to our service, integrate. We have a very sleek online checkout page that they can use, very simple integration process, no fees for 3 months. And if this goes on, we'll probably extend this further than or longer than 3 months.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, idea. You might find some companies learn that they like your service while they're trying out new things right now.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, it works well for everybody. We're helping the industry, helping people in stress. And if this turns out to be beneficial for everybody, then, you know, even better.
Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast. I know you must be busy these days, and hopefully you and your family and colleagues will all stay safe during this terrible pandemic.
Pleasure being with you, and thank you.
Thanks, Rel.
Yeah, okay,
cheers.